Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system. May of the exit pool. Wake up the silence with the hands. I'm feeling the love in the silence club. I can feel the space between us. Little Capitan and the common man. I'm the show them all.
Welcome to Star Chamber, ladies and germs. We have a really exciting show tonight because we are here with the man himself. Oh my gosh, I know everyone has been waiting for this for a while. I don't think we have any announcements right off the gate. Someone can jump in if I'm not thinking of someone or of something.
I think there is one thing that we need to do.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh man, guys, pick a key.
Happy birthday.
Hey, I haven't. You guys are in every key. I don't know.
Stephen.
Happy birthday to you.
That was the worst coordinated singing I think I've ever heard.
It really was. We need to get better at this. God.
We are authors and not singers for a reason. Just saying.
That is so true.
Well, anyway, we are here with Stephen Zimmer, the man, and, you know, of course it is his birthday, so happy, happy birthday, Stephen. We are going to be talking about a lot of things tonight. For those of you who don't know who Stephen Zimmer is, how dare you, stop listening right now and go Google him. But for those of us who are aware, he is a force of nature. He writes, what is it, two gigantic book series. He does side projects. He works so hard for Seven Star Press. He's helping to get Imaginarium off the ground. I mean, this is someone who is a powerhouse. He is metal in every sense of the word. So I'm really, really stoked that we can turn the tables on him for once and feature and interview him tonight. And there are a lot of people wishing you a happy birthday in the chat room as well, Stephen.
I'm here. And, I am not wearing any kind of producer's hat tonight, so I am strictly here as a guest and here in the chamber.
That's awesome. Well, have you had a good day so far? I know you had were planning to have a celebration down at Pete's Walk earlier today.
Yeah, we had a lunch there early, and Pete had a special running for just the lunch group. And we had some folks show up for that, and Robin Blankenship and Heather Brandenburg, who also is an author and all, was there, and then several other folks from Lexington here that I know as well, that know me from around here, showed up and had a nice little group for lunch. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm glad they could be there. I was really sorry I didn't get to go down.
No worries.
I understand there was some sort of wing challenge involved.
That was Stephen with
that
B, and
book.
Yeah, I didn't take the I didn't do the wing challenge because I don't do anything hotter than jalapenos. So I kind of leave the I grow them. I actually am growing ghost peppers this summer, but Are you really? So I'll grow hot peppers, but I won't eat them beyond jalapenos. I like jalapenos. But, one of the guys with us actually in 2 minutes nailed their wing challenge, which they have 6 minutes to complete. But he actually was pretty darn fast. So, we did have a successful person in our group. So that was neat.
Well, there's a chain that just opened up here. I usually do the BW, Buffalo Wild Wings, but there's a chain that opened up here not too long ago called Wings Etc. They have these wings called the wall wings, because if you can eat so many of them in a certain period of time, you end up with your picture on the wall. And we brought some home, and evidently some of the mild wings had gotten mixed up in it, because my son, who wasn't with us, had some of the leftovers and was like, oh, these wings aren't anything. And then suddenly the next day he popped like two in his mouth or whatever, and a pout burned a tongue out of his mouth.
Yeah, our big one's BW3s. That's the one that we always frequent down here. But it's usually pretty packed with when there's sports stuff going on. This was pretty cool.
Right. Well, this isn't wings, but it is a drink. There is a beer called Ghostface Killa, and there is like about 7 or 8 different kinds of peppers. In this beer, and imagine drinking like beer that's spiked with ghost pepper, jalapeno, so on and so forth.
Wow,
that sounds nice.
No, it's really not. It's really not at all.
Well, speaking of hot, Stephen, tell us a little bit about your new book.
Well, the newest one is actually launching Saturday in Lexington at Joseph Beth, and an event we're calling Onward and Upward. Definitely an event that's going to tie up a lot of stuff for me. Very importantly, and it's good for me to be doing it because I, of course, missed 2013 there with all that happened in our family. So this is kind of like a return to Joseph Beth kind of night. And the book is appropriate. It's the fourth book in the Rising Dawn saga, which is cross-genre. It often gets put in the urban fantasy category, but it's more accurately cross-genre. It's definitely got military thriller elements, science fiction, horror, fantasy, urban fantasy, paranormal, supernatural elements. Basically, a dystopian apocalyptic story that takes place in our world, or a world like ours. Actually, parallel universes come into the storyline. So it's a world that's like ours and has had a somewhat similar historical progression, but there's a group of mega elites running a thing a centuries old called the Convergence, and that's the name for their kind of like a campaign to kind of bring the world under one order. And within the Convergence, there's many that just do it because, you know, it's definitely, you know, the wealthy and the powerful are involved. And they do it for those reasons. But within that group, there's the group at the upper level are actually, drawing off of dark supernatural forces as part of this. And it kind of segues into kind of like a cosmic war. So it's kind of like a conflict of dark and light. And this group is, basically setting up. They create crises, and then they provide the solutions, which over history has advanced things to where they are on the verge of taking the world into one economic and one political order. And so that's kind of where the Rising Dawn saga hits into that history and shows that those final stages. And so Exodus Gate, Storm Guardian, Seventh Throne, and now Undying Light kind of show you you know, how they're bringing it to that final phase and what happens. And, you know, and there's it's got a lot of really hard-hitting, you know, kind of dystopian elements with what's going on in our world. And then, of course, we do have action that's happening in kind of like, you know, what I call almost like fantastical supernatural realms where, you know, you definitely get to meet some of the characters on both sides of the conflict and a lot of demonic, angelic kind of creatures, characters, and things based on a lot of mythologies. I mean, it's definitely a, you know, it's like I say, you know, I've got some stuff that if you're going to compare it to music, is more like my AC/DC or Kiss, and this would be more like my Dream Theater or Rush. You know, it's a more of a complex kind of structure, but I think at the same time, you know, it definitely packs a punch, and you know, and there's definitely a good story involved, and but with an ensemble cast, it's got a little more of a complexity to it, and so, yeah, it's definitely that type of series, and you know, I think that the funny thing is, I mean, each volume, the pace gets faster and faster and faster, and that's by design, and the seventh book in the series will be the final one. It's definitely planned for seven, and so. Yeah, that's where we're at. It's book four, and so yeah, now we're on the push to the finish line now, because we're over the midline.
Awesome. Well, one of the things that has always struck me about your novels, and I know you and I have this in common, is that Matthew Perry does all of your artwork and interior illustrations, and some of the things that he envisions, which comes straight out of your words, are pretty nightmarish.
Yeah,
for a fantasy book.
No, he gets it, and that's what I mean by it being cross-genre. I mean, I've definitely got darker elements. I've definitely got horror elements, and, you know, I draw off of those kind of influences. I just, you know, but like I said, it's just such a mix that, you know, you can't categorize it as such. But I mean, when they go into the abyss and they visit, you know, what's called in the book, I refer to it as either the Tenfold Kingdom or the Nether Kingdom, and that's, you know, and that's where the big baddie reigns, Diabolus, and it's basically like a realm of realms. I mean, there's like worlds and worlds of hells that are within the Tenfold Kingdom. It's like a realm of hells, and so once you get into those kind of territories, yes, it does get very dark and intense. And Matt, being a very astute horror artist, I think really gravitates to some of that kind of imagery really effectively. And so, you know, when we do the artwork for these books, I've always tended to kind of point to him, you know, some of those kind of things, some of the monsters, some of the creatures, some of the demonic things and whatnots, and because I know that Matt really likes drawing that kind of stuff, and what happens is what you've seen on you know, Legacy of the Gods, is that he just nails it. I mean, I've hardly ever had to ask him for any kind of revisions. I mean, it's very minor, if any, and you know, there's only the famous three-headed, one-headed dragon story from Storm Guardians. It's the only time I've had to ask him to do a major revision was when I had a three-headed dragon in the Storm Guardians based on a Russian mythological dragon, and in the text it's very clearly a three-headed dragon, and he turned in a one-headed dragon on the artwork, and so I, yeah, and of course, you know, he knew right away. I was like, Matt, yeah, just check that text again. He's like, yo, boy, yeah, he knew it, you know, right away, and but luckily the scene, the way he drew the scene, it was not that hard for him to go back and rework it a little bit and bring it in the head, so it didn't have, luckily, the way he had the composition, it wasn't too bad. But yeah, that's the only time I've ever had to say, hey, Matt, you know, there's something really in conflict with the text. Other than that, I mean, he's pretty much been just perfect. And this one, too, I think, I mean, he really got a lot of magic in the cover. And I think if you look at this cover, you know, I mean, he's got a medallion kind of theme going with the four covers, where each one has almost like its own icon, like a medallion kind of element in it. And right. This one, I mean, he really captured the spirit of what the Undying Light is in the book, and which I can't give away, obviously, because it's a big spoiler. But and there's actually a kind of double meaning to it. You know, you can read it in two ways, but he really nailed the cover, and I think the cover just sparkles.
Well, what I love about his stuff is just the elemental aspects that he brings, the mist and the fire and the water,
right.
and all of that. That is just so well crafted, you know. I mean, especially, you know, in some of the drawings for this new one of yours, the Undying Light, you know, you've got like mummified corpses with mist drifting from their mouths, and you know all of that is just so creepy and so well crafted. I don't know how he does it, but yeah, I mean
yeah.
And on the cover with the light and the way it's, you've got the prism effect, it's just really, really well done.
Yeah, the one you're referring to, I mean, it's actually a demon of disease that he's portraying in that picture you're talking about, where it has kind of like the mummified kind of thing with the mist and whatnot. And I mean, he just absolutely nailed that one. It's
yeah.
a really potent. That's actually from one of the Abyss kind of scenes that I was talking about earlier. But it's yeah, that's one that I knew that would be right in his wheelhouse. And with my Nephilim, I mean, the way I interpret the Nephilim is that they are the source of all the mythical monsters, the union of like essentially fallen angel blood with human blood creates a plethora of monstrous offspring. So not just giants, but also, you know, your chimeras or your manticores or your this or your that, your dragons, things like that are produced from that union of kind of like a demonic and human. And so I threw a few of the Nephilim at him, and he nailed a really good one that's based on a creature from Japanese mythology that's got a really nasty look to it. And it's another kind of composite creature, like a, you know, it's got a ape-like face, and it's got like tiger-like claws, and you know, it's really, really a nasty-looking creature. So,
yeah.
But anytime you give Matt something in that kind of zone, I mean, he just thrives on it, I think.
Yeah, it's really scary because it's almost like he walks into our heads. I mean, he's giving me stuff, and I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly what I was seeing when I was writing this.
Yeah, and it's cool because it's like, you know, I love the accuracy. I mean, I've always said that, you know, and I've always tried not to micromanage any artist I've worked with. You know, I want them to be able to, you know, do it as they kind of see it in their heads according to how they read the book. I mean, so it's kind of their interpretation of that. The only time that I will kind of, you know, put myself in the mix is when it directly conflicts with the text. I mean, if there's something that absolutely has a major conflict with the text, that's the only time I really kind of get into it. Not into it, but, you know, I mean, that's when I'll bring it to the artist's attention. But with Matt, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's pretty uncanny how my way of seeing it is very much aligned with the way that he ends up interpreting it. And it's just kind of wild how that works.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, having read some of your stuff over the years, I'm sure it's also due to how vivid your descriptions are. Because it's like anyone who reads, you know, it's like I'm the same way, being very visual, and how I'm wanting everyone to see things the way I'm seeing them. I tend to spell everything out, and you're the same way. It's like you're, you know, I give you a lot of grief sometimes for your books being very long.
Yeah.
Being very, 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 very big. But you know, I mean, you paint a picture with words, and you can't, you know, that's something that, you know, you've either got a talent for that or you don't, and you, my friend, have it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's something that I've actually been very conscious of. I think in some of my earlier books, I think that I may have been a little too heavy on descriptive elements, and I think I've gotten I've kind of fine-tuned the balance of that in my writing later in the series. I think that's one area that, you know, like I said, I am, you know, conscious of. And, yeah, and I still have that style of being visual. But, yeah, it's a, you know, that's been a process of, you know, like I said, just really honing in nowadays on exactly what needs to kind of be in the scene and leaving, you know, trying to leave more a little bit to the reader's imagination. So that's been one of the areas I've been working on over the last couple of years.
That's really cool.
Still got you there?
For those who are, for those who are trying to call in, apparently we've had some people try to call in, but they're not showing up on the switchboard. So keep trying. It has to actively pop up so I can bring people over. So we're not ignoring you. I just am not seeing things coming up on the switchboard. So again, if you have a question for Stephen, keep trying to get through. The number is 619-639-4616. And I swear I'm not trying to ignore anyone. So. Now, we're trying, I swear. You have an event coming up for your book, The Undying Light, Saturday. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can't tell you everything about it. There's surprises involved. But
no secret.
It's Joseph Beth, which is one of the best, truly. I'm not exaggerating. It's truly one of the best independent bookstores in the country, and the Lexington store is just phenomenal. I mean, it's just a showcase kind of bookstore, and it's definitely kind of humbling to be there because you know they've had all the they've had Stephen King there, they've had Anne Rice, they've had all the major authors have been there. George R. R. Martin, of course, he brought a gazillion people there. So it's definitely on the tour stops for all the major authors. So for me, being in there, and that's my hometown store, I mean, I feel like a little spoiled to have something that nice be my bookstore home. But it's where I've done all six of my previous novel launches. And I think it's just, it's a great place to do a book launch. And, Saturday at 5, we're going to do a nice presentation. We always do giveaways, and we're going to have several SSP books and authors in the giveaway piles, and lots of people will win prizes. And then everybody's a winner on Saturday because I have two gifts that I have prepared for Saturday. One is similar to gifts that I've given out at past Joseph Beth events, but I thought that I'd do a little extra on this one, and so there is a gift coming that's involved a lot of work. It's cost a little bit to do, but I think it's more than worth it. It's very personal in nature, and my sister can vouch for that because I have showed her the physical version, and as of today, I actually showed Jennifer Joseph Beth it, and she was like, wow. So I think everybody's reaction is going to be good to what it is, but it definitely commemorates the night. It definitely is a tribute in a lot of ways to some very special people in my world, and then it's just a lot of fun too. So I think people are going to get a kick out of the second gift, and we're going to, of course, there'll be time for Q&A and stuff, and always have some good banter in that area, and we're going to show off a couple new snazzy banners, which I have not used publicly yet, and then we'll get into the signing portion. And about 7, Joseph Beth is going to have an after party in their restaurant Bistro, which of course has a bar in it for all of you that like adult drinks, so we will be able to continue and party right on site at Joseph Beth following the signing. So hopefully this will be a fun night for everybody, and I certainly hope everybody enjoys it.
And enjoy it, because with what I have of your books, when your new book came out, I said, I've got to get it in hardback. So even if you just print one hardback, make sure that goes to me. Just saying.
Yeah, we're just getting back on a little bit of the hardback track. We'd been off of that for a little while. Michael's White Game has been printed and done. He got them at the last week to sign, and so those are about to go out. And then we've got, of course, the next one that's going to be firing out there is Hades Disciples imminently. We will be getting to a hardback version eventually. That will be addressed hopefully in the not so distant future, but we want to make sure as we do start to kind of ease back into some hardbacks that we do them right. And with existing series, we definitely don't want to drop the ball on that. We want to make sure that people who have been getting them from earlier years are going to get complete sets. So we're gonna make sure those get taken care of.
Well, and I've got some special callers on the line actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead with the special callers.
We've got a line. Like, Steven, you are popular, so I'm going to start putting them through. There's one in particular that really wanted to get to talk to you, so I'm going to patch them through right now. Okay, first caller, you are on.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
Gotta be
president.
Yes.
President? Wow, I got an upgrade.
So what up?
Do I get a jet?
Huh?
That's singing.
Do I get an airplane? I'm president. Do I get like a big airplane and all that?
Yeah, I got your airplane. No problem. It's in the back parking lot.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Well, good. That's that definitely will cut down on some of the travel issues. Then be able to get to the conventions quicker.
The seven-star Concorde.
I thought you'd enjoy that, Steven.
That was awesome. That was fantastic. That was more in key, too, than the first attempt by our group.
There's no way anyone could be less in key than we were.
Oh, my
yeah,
voice
after I heard,
be so proud. Yeah,
after I heard that, I figured...
Oh man!
Well,
awesome.
I guess you have a lot of callers, Steven. So I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday and rock on.
Thank you. Rock on.
You know who this is, right? You know who this is, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure.
Awesome.
All right.
Well, thanks for
calling in,
Marilyn. All right.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Take care.
Talk to you later. Bye. Okay.
Oh,
caller number two. You're on. Lex.
You have to tell me. I didn't know my number.
Okay. My bad.
You took somebody else's head. Shit, sorry.
There's one caller ahead of you. Wasn't that okay? All right. You know, it seems to be the same
anyway.
I just ruined everything.
It's me. It's Alexandra, and I'm not going to take up a lot of time or anything, but I did want to call and wish Steven a very, very happy birthday and wish him the best of luck on Saturday. I know that he is going to rock it out, and I cannot wait for his new book.
Well, I will be there.
I know you're going to be there.
That's the breaking news, as I intend on showing up on Saturday.
Well, I know several people who are going to be very, very upset if you don't show up. So,
well, I'm going to show up, so we have no worries about that.
I mean, I don't want to get any calls. I want to get any calls in South Carolina on Saturday night saying, "Can you come bail me out? Because we freaking killed Steven."
Oh God. Yeah, I think I know you're talking about. Oh God. Oh
yeah.
God. The world
but
braces.
Anyway.
The Lexington braces.
But anyway, like I said, I don't want to take up any time because I know you have a lot to talk about, but I did want to call and wish you a happy birthday. And
sparkles,
tinkles,
you
know,
and all that.
Yeah, sparkle, sparkle, sparkle. And you know I love you. Bye everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
God, that was too easy.
Okay.
I thought for sure she was going to grill me. Good God, that was easy.
I know, right? Everyone's being nice to you because you're the birthday boy, so jeez.
You planned this
that.
Right, Steven.
I
was actually braced for Lex's call. I actually thought it was going to be, you know, I was going to have to field something real tough there. That was pretty smooth and easy.
All right, well, we have another caller, so I'm going to patch them through. All right, next caller, you are on.
Hi, Steven. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know what else to say. I just wanted to say I hope I can be there Saturday. I really, really wanted to be there, but I think my ride is falling through. But I really wanted to be there Saturday, so just wanted to say happy birthday now. And that's all. I won't tell you or anything. I could, you know, ask you all these crazy questions and PMs saying, oh, when's this going to be announced? Oh, when that's going to be announced? For imaginary.
Well, right now, I just want to survive Saturday. That's all I'm doing to try to do.
Yeah. Well,
sure, thank you. I know that. And, but you'll have to put a post up about it or have somebody record it and put it up on Facebook.
I don't know. That's one of the things. No pictures, no cameras.
Oh, come on. You know what this, okay. You know what this means. I'll bring our cameras and we'll do a DVD set of the release of The Undying Light.
That's why I ordered in on Federal Express. We'll arrive tomorrow. I have a EMP device that I'm going to set off right before my speech that will fry all electronics.
No. This is what you do is you treat it like a PBS fundraiser. So, like, for every amount that you pledge to Imaginarium or Seven Star Press, and we'll give you the DVD set of the Undying Light release. And then for the next level up, we'll have Stephen come to your house and read to you.
Time Life presents. Every 2 weeks, you receive another edition of The Dying Light. Whether you want it or not.
Yep.
Well, that was all I wanted to say was happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Amy.
Thank you.
Ooh,
is there a caller number four?
Yeah, I think I knocked someone off. Sorry. Oh, man. I'm on fire tonight.
Why did we put Butterfingers on the switchboard tonight?
Shut up. You know what? I just woke up before the show. I fell asleep eating dinner, and I just woke up, and I'm sorry because I wrecked Steven's birthday. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. Lesson number one, never make so loud. Oh,
okay.
God.
I wore her out in the interview process earlier today.
Oh, it's awesome.
Is that what you call it?
Well, you know, when you have a question and then 17 follow-up questions and then the bonus question.
Well, you know, yeah. Hey, I'm an in-depth person. Steven's done the interview. He survived it. Yeah. He survived. Oh, my God. Steven's done the blog interview. He survived it. You can survive it.
It'll make you better than you were before.
Exactly.
What I was going to say earlier is if you have never seen a Seven Star Press special edition, limited special edition hardcover, they are truly beautiful to behold. It's like when I open the box on the wide game ones, it's just, you know, it's like the quality of it is just amazing. And then, you know, you get the special illustrations that you can only find in the hardcovers, and it's just something really cool.
They are nice. Yeah, I will say that.
Yeah. So because I always have people at conventions, you know, gravitate toward the hardcovers and pick them up, and you know, they see that they're numbered and you know, they have the extra illustration and whatnot, and it's just you know, it's just something really, really cool, especially since, you know, when you think about something that, you know, it has only 75 copies in the world. You know, it's something that that is truly collectible.
Right. Yeah. Uh-oh, silence. I think we lost out.
Oh, we did. That wasn't me. That was not me this time.
Well,
oh my God.
Well, Stephen, we were talking earlier about your that, you know, your books are kind of cross genre, but you recently stepped into my territory and did something that was purely horror. In fact, it's been compared to the work of Clive Barker. Can you tell us a little bit about Hellscapes?
Hellscape, so I've always been into horror, and like I said, if you really, you know, if you keep your eyes open and you read any of my books, I do have horror elements in all of them, and heavily in the Rising Dawn saga, but I've never, you know, like I said, I haven't had the right project, you know, as far as publishing-wise to go into straight horror, but I've always loved Dante's Inferno, Paradise Lost. I've always liked the Clive Barker-esque kind of imagery and whatnot, and a lot of those influences finally, I think, came to the surface with the Hellscapes collection, and I'm working on Volume 2 right now, as a matter of fact. But
oh, cool.
What they are is a themed collection of short stories. So they're, you know, so the stories sometimes have some connections, sometimes there's some recurring characters, sometimes there's, you know, but the thing that binds them all together is that they are hellscapes. They are all set in hell and entirely. And so each of the stories is a different kind of representation of a hell, and often the story is just about, you know, the individual, why they're, you know, them coming to realize where they are, why they're sometimes, in some cases, you know, we do reveal why they are there, and but, you know, it has a very visceral, very macabre kind of edge, and very surreal kind of edge, because of course, you know, reality bends and twists, you know, in hell, and so there's, you know, some of them take on, you know, a kind of monster kind of vibe, some of them take on a more psychological kind of vibe, and I've even got one story in the first volume that's got kind of like a hybrid Lovecraftian zombie-esque kind of vibe, but it's a lot of fun to be able to just go all out horror, and you know, with this theme collection, it's a nice outlet for me to do that as an artist, and I do intend to do hopefully a lot more of these, and am working on Volume 2. So, but yeah, I was surprised because I thought, you know, because of the fact that it is very a little more graphical and a little more, you know, no holds barred on the horror, I was a little nervous about how some of the, you know, some various readers would take to it, but I've actually been pleasantly surprised by the reaction to it and the embrace of it by a lot of readers that I've had who've really seemed to enjoy it. So, I mean, that's been a kind of a cool discovery as I've gone into it. So, but yeah, it's definitely a fun collection, and gets that side of me that's always been there a chance to, you know, fly for a while.
Well, it was recently featured in a couple of spreads in Fangoria magazine, which is of course the number one horror magazine in the world. So you can't get much better than that.
Well, yes, yeah, so in the sidebar next to the gigantic Michael West spread.
Well, I wasn't gonna mention that.
I know, but yeah, I just figured I'd point that out too, since you mentioned those ads. But it did have it in the sidebar and had a couple of neat review quotes that kind of went along with it, but. Yeah, I think people like that kind of Barker-esque kind of stuff, or really like the imagery in Dante's Inferno, for instance. I think they really will like these. I really do think so.
I've had a lot of positive comments on your story from our cancer benefit anthology, Vampires Don't Sparkle.
Well, cool. Yeah, that was a fun one because I decided to kind of really go historical vampire in that one, and get at the roots of some of the early kind of foundations for the vampire legends. And so I went Draugr on that one. I went with a Norse Draugr as my vampiric creature, the foundation for the vampire creature I had in that one. So that was kind of fun because I kind of got to go on a slightly historical tangent on that particular story. So that was – and actually based on an actual archaeological excavation where they came across of some folks that they dug up that had been beheaded. So it was in England. So it was kind of cool to kind of fuse some real history into that story, both on the history of vampires and the actual archaeological history. So that was a cool story. I really enjoyed doing that.
Well, you mentioned fusing kind of things that you've, you know, actual events or news with your fiction. And I noticed that I know I've had this happen to me where, you know, I'm writing something and then suddenly I come across something that fits totally into what I'm doing, and it's something that's happening in the real world or is something that's a real myth that's believed by an actual group of people. Do you ever see things happen in the news or in the world that makes you think that, you know, maybe you're more prophetic than...
Well, you know, interesting you mentioned that. I mean, all the time in the Dawn Saga, and actually with Undying Light, I had to kind of speed up my projections a little bit on the way that world's going, just so I can make sure I can stay ahead of the curve on this one, because a lot of the trends and historical trends that I see, you know, really popping into it. A lot of the readers pointed out too. I mean, like I'd written the Exodus Gate long before, you know, like I said, the 2008 financial crash and stuff like that. And a lot of the things that, you know, that readers have pointed out have been things that I've already had set in this book series well before the actual things happen in our world. And so, yeah, they've definitely seen a lot of congruence between real world and fiction. And, of course, you know, I do a lot of metaphorical stuff, you know, because I've got a lot of fantastical creatures and whatnot. So there is a lot of metaphor involved, but it is getting at some history and some world events and some themes and some trends and whatnot, because that's what kind of inspired me, because I, you know, that's actually what, you know, it's one of the things that scared the heck out of me when I started writing this in the 90s, was just kind of seeing what direction the world seems to be going in and kind of projecting that into a fantastical series. And then, you know, then when it all kind of seems to line up, it definitely kind of puts me in a Twilight Zone kind of mode sometimes. But it inspires me all the time. World events, history, things, you know, things that I, patterns in history, especially patterns in geopolitics, patterns in, you know, all kinds of things, and what really goes into wars? Because I always think the way history is taught about wars is horrible. It's always on such a surface level, and getting into following money trails and getting into the real basis of why wars are fought and who's really behind it, what they're really accomplishing with it. That's stuff that fascinates me. And it can really scare the heck out of you when you dig deep into it. You start to see the puppet masters, as I call them. And once you kind of see how that kind of works in the world, it does kind of unnerve you a bit.
Well, with all your different interests and with all your different, I know you've played with, you know, you've gone from genre to genre and you've combined a lot of different genres. Is there a genre that you really want to write that you haven't gotten to yet?
I would say right now, like I said, I just finally got to really do one that I've always wanted to. I finally handed in a full Raiden Valkyrie novel, you know, so a full Sword and Sorcery novel. So that was one goal that was just accomplished, actually this past week. But in other things, I would like to do space opera. That's something, and I actually have ideas sketched out for space opera kind of project, but I'm not really drawn as much to hard science fiction because I do like to work in a little bit of allegory and metaphor and things like that, so I love to be able to use the fantastical. So it wouldn't be like a hard science fiction, but more of a you know, like in the realm of what, like something like Star Wars is, more space opera. And that's something that I really would like to do at some point.
That's awesome. I would read the hell out of that. That's really cool. So I think you would do a lot with that.
So in other words, yeah, kind of like doing past, present, and future. I got my Fires in Eden to take care of, like almost like older world kind of medieval-esque kind of vibe. I've got my Rising Dawn saga, which is set in, you know, something close to the present day, maybe a little futuristic, and then something like this would be a little more more forward-looking as far as, you know, the technological environment and stuff like that. So that would be kind of fun. It'd be like a kind of like a tidy, a nice tight past, present, and future collection.
That's really cool.
So
would you write it as a separate universe, or would you somehow try to combine it all as past, present, future in the same universe?
I got to take that question very carefully because of some things between the other two series. So you may be stumbling on some interesting ground here. That's all I'll say. I don't want to totally give away exactly what's happening, but it's you could be onto something with suggesting that parallel universes might have connections.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. So there might be some cool stuff in that
regard. So, okay, with that in mind, but separate from this question, for readers who are completely new to you, what series or what do you suggest they start with? Or could they do either of your series? What would be the best intro to Stephen Zimmer's fiction?
I think the good intro is actually Chronicles of Ave, my short story collection. And the reason I say that is because it has very diverse stories in it. Some are a little darker, some are not. Some have more creature stuff, some don't. But it gives you a real good sense of my style of writing. It gives you a real good sense of some of the kind of themes that I deal with. And it does it in a way that you don't feel like you have to commit to, you know, a big book series to try it. It's something, you know, the stories are standalones. And like I said, if you like the world that they're based in, obviously it's an easy segue to the Fires in Eden series because the stories are set in the world of Ave. They are self-contained. They are standalones. And yeah, if you've read the Fires in Eden series, there's things referenced in Fires in Eden that you get more from the short stories. They give you more background and certain things and whatnot. But for a completely new reader, I actually think that's a good intro because it does give you different flavors of my style and different tones. And it, you know, it's not like you feel like you have to get, you know, a bunch of big books, so to speak. But if people are in the wheelhouse of something like if I meet a George R. R. Martin reader, for example, or, you know, somebody likes Robert Jordan or something, it's very easy to segue into Fires in Eden. The other series is a little trickier because it's not really like a Dresden, or it's not really like, I mean, it really is cross-genre, and it's got an epic scale to it, so it's an ensemble cast epic scale story, so it's a little harder for me to, just segue with that one, for instance. So usually if somebody has never read me and just wants to kind of try my style out, I actually recommend that one short story collection.
Very cool. Very cool. I know I keep forgetting, every time we talk about your work, I keep wanting to bring that up because I think, you know, sometimes when authors do different series, and I mean, I love larger books, but I think, you know, sometimes when there's multi-series, people just don't know where to begin. So I think that's a really good recommendation for people.
Yeah, and like I said, that's not discounting like Hellscapes, and it's not discounting the steampunk Harvey and Solomon steampunk stories that I do. It's just that what I'm saying is that the Chronicles of Ave is more representative of my spectrum as a whole. It's got multiple things in it to give you a flavor, many more flavors of my style as opposed to just one thing. So that's why I think it's a good sampler.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's got Winter's Embrace. I love that story too because it takes it's got a monk knight that's almost like a crusader type knight who has to help a what we would call in today's world like a pagan witch, and they have to work together and actually become friends in the story, and it's cool to be able to do something like that. I mean, because that takes some supernatural elements. It's definitely got some horror elements in that story, and all kinds of cool stuff. It's got some mythical elements, but yeah, but that gives you an idea though of you know, some of the, and you know what I mean by bringing together a few different things and giving a flavor to the readers.
Very cool. Well, I know, like I've seen, if you've done events with Stephen, I mean, people just readers really, I think they identify with your work. They definitely get into it. They like to submerge themselves in your world. It's really neat to watch you interact with your readers because they just gravitate to you like none other. It's really, really special to watch.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you've noticed some people liking it. That's good.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. You were talking to people at the book fair in March and things like that, and they really, like, they definitely wanted to, like, pour out what was on their minds about the books, or your books, or books in general. Like, they really definitely love discussing stuff with you.
Well, I try to be as accessible as possible. I mean, that's something that, you know, I take very very seriously is being there if somebody wants to talk to me about it. And I think that's I'm definitely not the standoffish type.
Well, it definitely shows. I know you have a lot of people, you know, not just at the press, but you know, for other events that we've done together. I mean, people, just everyone knows Stephen, and everyone comes over to talk to him, and everyone wants to talk to him. And it's just, you feel like you're, like, with a Beatle or something, like it's the indie press world or something. It's, like, it's really fun.
Well with Stephen, here's something about him that really drew me to him very quickly, and it's also been the same for other people I know. Yeah, I'm actually hoping my phone doesn't screw up on me again. It's been going in and out. So if I get disconnected, I'll call back and I'll, you know, say it again. But the reason why I think so many people flock to Stephen is because not only is he a fantastic author, but he is also a fantastic person who is willing to share any and all of his knowledge with those who inquire of that knowledge. So overall, I mean, you just have a great subject and a great person there. And, you know, if my phone screws up again before the night's over and I get disconnected once again, happy birthday.
Thank you. No good deed goes unpunished, though, I will say that. But, yeah, sometimes you get pummeled pretty good for trying to help folks, that's for sure. But, yeah, I've always tried to be helpful because, you know, like I said, rising tide lifts all ships, and that's kind of always been my kind of focus, is that win-win kind of philosophy, which unfortunately is very uncommon, I've found over the years. But I've always felt like that's the healthiest path to, you know, seeing everybody advance, whether it's in my own career. I mean, yeah, if you've got people thriving, everything moves forward. It's, yeah, if everybody's just a bunch of islands, yeah, things don't quite work as well. So I've always thought that it's good to engage folks and help them if I can.
Well, that's what I think is so great about, you know, the whole press, you know, Seven Star Press, is that, you know, it's really more of a family atmosphere than you know, anything else. It's you know, it's like, yes, we're all writers with our individual series, and we tend to, you know, kind of go off and do our own thing and get our own stuff done. But when it comes to, you know, whether it be conventions or you know, a show like this or whatnot, it's, you know, everyone comes together and is supportive of everyone else's work.
Yeah, there's definitely an advantage to that, and when people understand that concept, it's amazing how much faster things work, and I can show it. I mean, there's certain writers that I can show you hard data on. You're one of them, Michael. But yeah, I mean, the ones that really have that kind of mentality of the you know, that are helpful to other people, that do are supportive of other people as well. You know, of course, yeah, you're engaged in your own stuff fully, but the ones that, you know, that are, that do get out there and help and support, be supportive and give back. Yeah, it's amazing how those people tend to be the ones that I've seen as an observer that do move forward a little, not just a little faster, but often cases a lot faster. So it does work. I mean, I know sometimes it seems counterintuitive to say that when you're helping other authors or other folks that you're taking away from your own, but I could just get people to see what I see. It really does work. It really does advance things for everybody.
And I wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, if you're going to be in the business, you need to be family, because it's just easier to be able to support one another. It's easier to just be in a positive atmosphere versus being in a room with about, you know, 10 or 15 people who you've either bashed or criticized. You know, I'd much rather be in a room with people who like me versus being in a room with people that are scheming to, you know, spike my drink after the con is over.
Yeah, this is a brutally hard industry. I mean, that's one thing that I've come to really appreciate over the last few years, is just how tough it is and how difficult it is to make progress, and nothing is ever evolving that really makes it any easier. So I always thought that, yeah, the negative energy just doesn't work. I mean,
well, I think it's definitely – I definitely agree with that it's not built to be an easy industry per se, but I definitely think, you know, what makes it harder is a lot of people go in with either egos or thinking only of, like, what they can achieve or gain, or they've been through stuff and they're hurt, so they're kind of desperate to prove themselves. There's a lot of, you know, id energy or ego energy knocking around, and I think that, you know, part of it is to, for better or worse – try to at some point cut through. I mean, you're always going to deal with it, but to try to not let that overtake you. And I really appreciate what you've done to, like, keep us together and keep us on a good path, you know, for positivity and for teamwork and as a family, instead of it being all about, you must do this, you have to be this, you have to be here, oh my God, this person's doing this, or, you know, everything else. So that's definitely appreciated.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's the only way I think you can even try to move forward, because, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of people that I always call them the folks that are very impressed with themselves. That's my term for them.
Yeah.
the mirror on the wall, who's the fair and small kind of folks. But they and I don't think they do that well, because they're the ones that, you know, tend to always be me, and it gets old very quick.
Yeah.
And you see it so fast out there. And that's not to say that, you know, yeah, when you're motivated and active and doing stuff, that's not what I'm talking about. But the ones that are just so, you know, narcissistic, I mean, yeah, just
their image.
So, but yeah, there's plenty of room to be supportive, and you will move quicker if you do that. So it just happens.
I have to look at myself in the mirror every day, so there's no way I can be narcissistic.
Yeah, then Alex, who stands in front of the mirror, goes, "My, how good looking that guy is."
Well, you know, it is one of the day. I just took one look in the mirror and said, "Hey, that's it."
after a few Mr. Universe flexes and
running the comb to the hair, you know, doing the profile and the head on. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny, because today I was at the gym and there was a guy who was lifting weights in front of a mirror, and like every time he would get done with a set, he would like look at himself in the mirror and flex. You know, it was just like, really?
Oh man. Nice.
I'm like, do we love ourselves or something?
That is one of the people that's very impressed with themselves. That's one of the ones I'm talking about.
You know, when I see things like that, when I see guys doing stuff like that, because I have seen that at the gym before, if I knew for a fact I could go over and get away with this, I would do it, but I'd probably get my butt kicked. I would just go up to him and say, sir, I am so, so, so very sorry about your penis. I truly am.
Ouch. Oy. There's a section of the standard that we've been missing all hour.
You know what they say about steroid use?
Oh, man.
Wait. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, here's something weird. I'm presuming... I don't know if you guys have changed things on me. The clock says we have 30 minutes left. Is this actually true, or what are we doing?
Well, Susan programmed this week's show, so I think what she may have done is ambush us with a 90-minute show.
Oh, okay. Well, we can keep going. All right.
Because
I'm looking
at
it
like...
Speaking of people who like themselves...
Yeah, that was not me. That's Ronnie, by the way, is not here tonight. Yeah, who conveniently not present.
I feel like I've woken up into the Twilight Zone. I'm like, what? Yeah.
Well,
I did not
do
this. Just for the record. This was Susan.
I saw that at the beginning and thought it was like, yeah, because when I saw that at the beginning, I thought it was like a minute 30.
I know. I was freaked out.
Susan set up the show this week because I was not going to write my own write-up. I mean, that's like, if I'm going to be a guest, then somebody else is going to set the show up. Because I don't want to be one of those people that's impressing themselves like that. So, that's all Roddy. And, she wrote the text for the this week's show write-up. So if you have any complaints about that, that's who you're taking them up with. But... Well, we can handle this. Lex is lurking around somewhere. I'm sure she can fire a question to get us going.
Oh, Lex, you have any questions, darling? Or any questions from the chat room? Come on, guys. You're all talking amongst yourselves there. Come on.
Yeah, they're probably doing – I don't know who's in the chat room, but they're probably – they can come up with something, I'm sure. I mean, we can definitely
Jennifer's there.
I can say that the new Kiss vinyl reissues are spectacular. The new 180-gram heavyweight Kiss vinyl reissues are awesome. So buy them. Yeah. There you go. There's a quick review for you. That's kind of fun.
Well, and the Cabal cut, the director's cut of Nightbreed, just went on sale today, for pre-order today, a limited edition to 5,000 copies.
Wow,
from,
that
Shout
actually
Factory.
I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, that's already in my list, though.
Yeah, it's my son woke me up at about 3:00 this morning and said, "Yeah, Dad, I pre-ordered this for your birthday in September," and I said,
awesome.
"I love you, son." I always did like you best.
My sister knows me well. I got a. 6 different varieties of Monster drinks today as part of my birthday present from her. So that's another little tidbit.
Have you had the Irish flavored Java Monster?
Absolutely. It's
I love that. That is so. It's the best of both worlds. It's the Monster Energy plus Irish coffee like mixed together.
Let's give a shout-out to Chris Morton, the Cabin Goddess. Oh, my God. That was one of the first things I saw when I woke up today. She made this amazing image using one of Matt Perry's illustrations from The Undying Light. Put me on a Merlot bottle, but made it a Monster Energy theme. And just awesome way to wake up and start the day because, of course, she posted it god-awful early our time. You know, she was – it was about probably maybe 3 a.m. her time or something like that. But it's – oh man, it was cool. And
I don't know when and if Chris actually sleeps.
She does.
I don't think she does. Kevin
got
I think
it.
She recharges.
She's
she goes into a snowbank and just recharges. Yeah. Okay, we do have a question from Jen Mulville. She's saying that we're ignoring her questions. So, okay, we're not ignoring your questions, Jen. Okay. She
Jen
says,
Mulville
let's talk about
rocks.
My Yep. Let's talk about my oh, people stop talking. I can't get to this thing. Let's talk about my favorite characters, the Enki. I love them. Where did you get the idea? This is a real question.
Oh, yes. The Enki, they are a shape-shifting race that in the storyline, I'll just give you the quick lowdown, they existed before the Flood, and in the events of the Exodus Gate, there's some things that happen to where the Enki are able to come into our world at this time. And so they are a very active part of the series. They are a shape-shifting race. I won't give too much detail about that. They take on a they're not werewolves. They are a actual race. So yeah, if you get bitten by one, you've just been bitten by something very nasty. You're not going to turn into one of these things. They're a blaster, right? Because Enki is what it is. It's kind of like based off the kind of the idea of heaven and earth in kind of the Sumerian lore. So they're kind of like a fusion between the primal and the sentient and spiritual. And because of the kind of mix that they have, I can't give away this spoiler, but they have a certain ability that factors into the series. It's very important, and it's the reason why the dark kind of things are hunting them down. And there's a reason why the fallen avatars are having the Nephilim hunt them down to, you know, full genocide in the pre-flood world. And there's a very specific reason. And so when they're brought into the modern day, they have a big asset for the group that's kind of resisting the convergence. And that gift gets revealed a little bit more in the Undying Light, and it's just a blast to write them because they're tough and all those kind of good things, and they're wolfish, which I love.
Well, as someone who is approaching the end of two series, I have to ask this question: do you know the ultimate ending of the Chronicles of Ave and the Rising Dawn saga,
Rising Dawn.
Or
yeah.
Do you know where, you know, like, do you have the last chapter of each one all planned out, or are you taking it as it goes?
This is just me, okay? I'm not criticizing anybody that does it differently, but I will not start a series until I know the destination. So I didn't start the Dawn Saga or the Fires in Eden series until I already had a great grasp of the finale. And so I know my end destination. Now, that being said, I'm not I don't outline things to death to the point where I can't evolve as I'm writing the series. I do leave room to breathe so I can introduce new characters, new threads, things like that, and have. As the series has progressed, you know, new things that come to light or I'm inspired by. But I do have my core. I do know that the most central roadmap is there. And that's how I can say that, yeah, this is going to be a 7-book series, because I do have definite goals for each title on the way on that roadmap. So, yeah, so I do know where it's concluding, and it's spectacular. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I've usually what I do when I start a book is I'll write the first chapter and the last chapter, and that last chapter probably changes a half a dozen times or more by the time I finally get to it. But I'm like you. I have to have a destination in mind. You know, I can't just I mean, believe me. I mean, there are times when the entire a character does something that changes the entire thing that I was going for, but you know, I'm like you. I have to have some idea where I'm going. Otherwise, I won't know when I got there.
Yeah, because I think it's very easy, and this is just for me, but I think if I start into it without knowing that finale, it's very easy to go off on, you know, get on too much of a tangent, and I think that, you know, then you get the danger, I think, of meandering from volume to volume as opposed to having a very dedicated concentration, you know, that really moves the series along. And so, yeah, I think it's, for me, it's important, at least, is to have that. And no, yeah, you do have changes with characters. You do have things that evolve and change. And yeah, where a character arc might go might change, sure, absolutely. But in terms of the most core plot kind of direction, yeah, I definitely need that kind of signpost.
So do you ever worry that you're going to forget that you asked a question and get to the final book and not answer it?
So far, so good, knock on wood. I haven't had that problem just yet. And one of the things I love to do, and that's why I think my books accelerate pace-wise, is because seeds that I plant in, like, for instance, the Exodus Gate, they start to germinate and pay off by the time Seventh Throne and Undying Light hit. So the seeds, you know, start hitting, and as they start hitting in number and other things are coming together, I think it naturally kind of speeds the pace. And so that, you know, hopefully by the time, you know, we hit book seven, it's a, you know, downhill on the roller coaster, the big hill at the end here. So, but it's, yeah, it's definitely, yeah, something that I watch very carefully, and I definitely don't want to have loose ends when they're done.
So we have another question from Jen. She wants to know,
cool.
ask Stephen if he has considered audiobooks. I have a friend who would love his books, but she can't hold them up.
Oh, God. The audiobook question. Oh, dear. I get that all the time.
Yeah,
the problem is that I'd like to do them. I'd love to, but I don't want to do them poorly. I want to make sure, I mean,
right.
They are big projects. I mean, I think that Chronicles of Ave or Hellscapes or even this new Raiden Valkyrie book, for instance, because I think it's going to, in print, it'll be about 270 pages, maybe 260 pages. It'll be a much shorter novel. I think something like that, I can get the kind of production environment to do it well. To do my full epic scale series is going to be very difficult. You know, to get somebody that really is top end to, you know, be able to do investment in the production to do that right. I think that's going to be a little trickier, and unfortunately, you know, at this stage I can't do it yet. But you know, I'd like to. Yeah, I certainly would down the line, but I don't want to. I think one of the worst things in the world is a poorly done audiobook, and I don't want to release anything that's, you know, like I said, not done what right. And so I think that, yes, I think you can see in the near horizon some of the short story stuff and maybe the Raiden novel being done audiobook-wise, and, you know, just as soon as I can, I'll definitely get into the project with the other ones, I mean.
Yeah. Well, like anything, you don't want to just do something to do it. You want it to be a good product.
Right.
So, and to keep readers engaged. So, no, I can totally understand that, and I applaud you for wanting to keep that quality, definitely.
Yeah, I didn't want to just have Steve drinking monsters and on a cheap microphone recording MP3s
yeah.
or something like that.
Right. Well, that's why people keep asking me at shows that I do if any of them are available in audiobook. And I said, well, until I can find or until my publisher can find someone to read them besides me, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, audiobooks, I mean, you got to do them well. And, I mean, some, yeah, there's a lot of different. Yeah, we could do a whole show on audiobooks. There's just a lot of different ways to approach them, but
well,
but
I mean,
yeah.
I've heard some really good audiobooks where, you know, people are you know, the readers are acting out all the parts and doing voices and you know, putting, you know, it's like a performance, and it's awesome. And then there was one audiobook. We were on a road trip with my parents, and we were listening to the audiobook of City of Bones. And the girl that they had reading this book, she was just like, it was all monotone, and it was just like,
yeah. Right,
you know,
exactly,
I mean,
right.
You just
I feel like you either have to have either it's written as like a cast drama, and that's the way to go, or you have to have someone who is a really like all around good performer who can do all the different characters, or just someone who has a really good reading voice and who maybe doesn't go all the way, but is still not monotone. It's a very weird fine line, kind of, to find a good place for a performer for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's exactly it. But, you know, like I said, I am definitely wanting to do them. So,
oh, yeah.
As soon as we get the right environment, yeah. Next question. Who's got... What is your favorite color?
What is your quest?
My quest. Oh, God. That's a big one. Yeah, we'll have to do another show on that one. I know my favorite color right now is blue. That's so I can answer that without being thrown over the bridge. So that's
okay.
Good news. And I love hard rock and heavy metal.
Yes, you do. I had no clue about that until today, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wanted to break that. Easily there.
Yeah, easily. I know Kiss is probably like the one I hear you talk about most as being influential, but who besides Kiss is probably, like, if you're going to recommend three artists that people had to listen to right now, whether it's new stuff, old stuff, whatever, who would you recommend to people?
Kiss, Rush, and AC/DC. As far as, like, just for a core. I like Rush because Rush takes on that complex progressive world and still has good rock and songwriting and great stage performances and stuff. Kiss because, I mean, like
yeah.
I said, just theatrics and bombastic, larger than life, fantastical, and they're definitely bring in a lot of fantasy elements into their whole persona, but it's for sure. And then AC/DC because they really drive at the core of what rock and roll is all about and always have, with just no apologies, straight at you. You know, just the real deal. I could go on about 100 bands that I love, but if I were to just say three to get you off the ground, those would be probably the three that I would in my 101 course that I would have my class listen to for sure. So, there's plenty of others ranging from Nightwish to the earlier Yngwie Malmsteen. I think his latest albums have had really bad production, but it's, of course, Megadeth and everybody else. I could go on and on and on about all that stuff. Crew, of course. Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
All the greats. Black
Sabbath.
Yeah.
I sent you a survey earlier today about which 80s metal band are you. Did you do that
I
one?
I saw it pop up. I have not, today has been, I've not gotten a stop just yet, but I plan on doing that survey because I'm actually curious because that's like the golden age. So I'm curious to see where I'd fall into it. But hopefully it'll be like Iron Maiden. That'd be cool. Or Judas Priest. And I actually answered academic challenge questions in high school on the academic team because I was an Iron Maiden fan, and I learned history from Iron Maiden songs. So it's like the Trooper, Charge the Light Brigade, and their song about Alexander the Great, and all kinds of history worked into them. So never say that metal can't benefit you, in your academic pursuits.
Metallica did Call of Cthulhu.
Yep, absolutely. That's one of the best... And Ride of Lightning, I think, is one of the best metal albums ever made, too.
And then you had, learned about the Trail of Tears from Europe,
Yeah. it's true. Yeah, you get a history course. But,
well,
I don't look – like, Kiss lyrics aren't quite the history course kind of stuff. You don't listen to Kiss for deep lyrics, but Rush actually is very poetic because Neil Peart is actually a great writer from Rush.
Yeah.
I will say that as far as writers go, for lyrics, Neil Peart with Rush is fantastic. He's definitely somebody to listen to.
Oh, come on, Rock and Roll All Night is very deep.
Yeah, like Let's Put the X in Sex. That was one of Kiss's crowning moments of lyricism.
Lick it up, Ben.
Lick it up, yeah. That's another gem.
Oh, yeah.
The glory days.
All Night and Bang Bang You. Those are some deep songs too. Yeah. Yeah, no Kiss. Yeah, I'm not listening to Kiss for any kind of deep lyrical content. Strictly fun. But yeah, I love them.
Oh, by the way, Alex, his phone was giving him issues, but he wanted you to know he felt really bad. He wanted you to know that he had to cut tonight short due to his phone dying. But there's nothing but love here for you, Stephen, and he's raising his glass to you for your birthday. So.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I thought we just ran him off.
No, that his phone kept cutting him off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Too funny.
Well, at least it's not like that one week where we had like an air raid siren that cut us all off.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm surprised.
Well,
you guys haven't bombarded me with weird sounds. I got lucky there, too.
Yeah, that's all I could do to keep an eye on the chat room and the calls. Oy, got lucky. I'm not quite awake.
Well, if Malva Hill's in the chat room, I know my talk of metal has definitely stirred her up. She should be happy to know that, yeah, the Zero King boys have their new demos done with Ben Wells from Blackstone Cherry. And I actually am getting to listen to some rough mixes of those hopefully later tonight. So get a little sneak preview on those guys. But those guys are really, really talented. It's a crying shame the industry is such a just giant mess right now, because I think that, God, if it was like, you know, even 10 years ago, I mean, Zero King would have been signed in a heartbeat, I think. Yeah, they've definitely got the goods.
Well, Gemini Syndrome started following me today on Twitter.
Oh, I'm jealous now. Yeah, you get your picture of Lita Ford. Gemini Syndrome is like one of my favorite new bands. I love them. I mean, God, they are good.
And that's good lyrics. I sat next to Stephen Perry and Sherry Curry all weekend this weekend.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Really? Really, Michael? I swear to God.
Well, I got to sign my first guitar over the weekend. I was like, you want me to sign this? You know?
Mentioned about that. That's very cool.
Yeah, I actually got, they actually posted pictures. I didn't take any pictures of it, but they actually posted pictures earlier today, so I got to copy those. But they're auctioning, it was really cool, actually. They're auctioning, they had everybody at the convention sign it, all the celebrities and whatnot, and they're going to auction it off to benefit St. Jude's Hospital.
Very cool. I still think, though, that picture of you with Lita Ford, that's just top of the line. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah, that was a high point for me as well.
Yeah,
well,
she
liked my Jeeky shirt, so I gave her one. And she just kept saying,
that's
badass. You are badass. And I was just like, wow, Lita Ford just called me badass.
She's one of the true all-time metal queens for sure. So, I mean, yeah, you can't get much better than that.
No, and you know, it's like I'd heard so many stories about, you know, Cherie, you know, from the – you know, over the Runaways years and whatnot, and she was just as sweet as could be. She was really, really cool. But I've met, you know, half the Runaways now. I haven't met Joan or
Joan Jett, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. So I need to meet Joan and have her sign my Repo the Genetic Opera poster, because she has a cameo in that film.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
Cool.
Oh, I love that movie, too.
Too awesome.
Yeah. Before we forget, Stephen, because we're winding up, we got about 6 minutes almost. So do you want to give your link so where people can find you so they can buy all your books and learn about you and, you know, and you want to let them know what time on Saturday your event's going to be?
Sure. Easy to find me. If you remember these letters, S S-G, G as in George, S-G Zimmer. S-G Zimmer is my handle on both Facebook and Twitter. So you can look me up both of those places using S-G Zimmer. And then my name, Stephen Zimmer, with a P, and Stephen with a P-H, is my web address, so stephenzimmer.com. And then Saturday in Lexington, Kentucky, at Joseph Beth Booksellers at 5 p.m. is Onward and Upward, our event for the launch of The Undying Light. So that's 5 p.m.
And,
after Party at the Bistro at 7, and then I am not driving, so who knows what's going to happen.
And there is only one Joseph Beth in Lexington, right, in case people are putting it into their GPS.
Yeah, there's only one. It's on right on Nicholasville Road, and it is a showcase bookstore. It is really, really spectacular.
It is probably one of the coolest bookstores I've ever been in. I've been in that several times, and it's just, I mean, it's two levels. I mean, that's how massive it is.
Yeah, they have this gigantic atrium where they hang the banners, and they just look gorgeous. I mean, I posted one picture of mine on Facebook the other day, and it's just so cool to see those when they hang them.
Well,
up there.
Didn't at one point you have a banner for one of your books next to George R.R. Martin's banner?
Yeah, that was ways back, but yes, I did. So they actually do put guys like me up there next to the really big ones too. So they do treat their small press authors well. So I mean, they make you feel just as much of a bestseller as the Martins and everybody else. So it's that's definitely a major kudos to Joseph Beth for the way they treat all authors. But yeah, Jennifer Hendren is fantastic. Worked in the past with Brooke Raby and Michael Cruikshank, and they've moved on. Not with Joseph Beth currently, but of course, I always will remember them with working with them in the past events. But Jennifer Hendren has just been fantastic, and I've had a very smooth transition working with her. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Saturday. Put on a
very
good show.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking forward to it. Yeah.
I have no idea who's on the calendar show, but I'm ready, and I will have the goods there for sure.
Awesome.
So, yeah, you got my links and all that good stuff, and
yep.
Easy to find.
So read his books. Yeah.
Yeah, give them a try, and I've got some diversity in the catalog, so. If you like different things, like you like just horror, if you like just steampunk or sword and sorcery, you know, I've got something to offer. So I do have some different types of stuff now. So yeah, please do. Yeah, give it a shot.
And if you like Stephen's books, if you don't like Stephen's books, if you want to see more of Stephen's books, post a review on Goodreads or Amazon.com because it really, really helps.
Yeah, yeah, definitely appreciated by those of us who are authors.
Hey, Stephen Zimmer, could people get your books through the Seven Star Press read-to-review program?
Yes, they can, or they can get them for absolutely free.
So there you go.
Free? That's insane. Who does
free?
That?
Who would they contact to join the read-to-review program?
We have a link on our website at 7starpress.com. There is a link to the read-to-review page on there at 7starpress.com if they want to join in on that. And we do periodically put out that link on Twitter and Facebook at 7starpress. So if you follow us on Twitter and Facebook for the press, you will see that link put out roughly about every week or two. We'll put it out there a few times.
Yeah.
So,
and can they get any 7-star press? And can they get any 7-star press authors' works through that?
Anyone they want. Yeah, it's one at a time, so they can't get 100 things at once. But as long as they go one book at a time, and as long as they post at least on Amazon and one other place, you know, usually Goodreads, but if they do Amazon, Barnes & Noble, that's fine. But as long as they do Amazon and one more, that's it. That's the only requirement. They have no deadlines.
That's awesome.
Yeah, do it your own page.
So, guys, we are down to, 70 seconds. So, Stephen, happy birthday. Thank you so much for joining us and talking about your awesome work. Thank you so much for all you do for all of us. I know there were a couple questions we didn't get to, and I'm sorry, guys, but obviously we all have a lot of awesome, awesome feelings for you. So happy, happy birthday. Anyone who can get out to this man's event in Lexington on Saturday, come and help support him. Let's rock it out.
Thank you. It was definitely fun being on the firing squad with Mr. West and Sayla Janelle, who I can now say your name correctly. So it's wonderful. So now I say Jackie's booked the wrong way. It's Red Heart and Sayla and Reclamation. No, it's Sayla. Yeah. There you go.
My plan is complete.
But take care, and thank you.
Well,
thank you very much for having me.
Well, happy birthday and good luck on Saturday, Steve.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yes. Have a good night.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Yep. All right. Thanks for joining us, guys. Have a good night.